On behalf of Lineberg Information Services, welcome to Portfolio Tax Planning in a Volatile Economic Environment. I'm Bob Keebler, and joining us today are attorney Mark Fichtenbaum and Robert Gordon of 21st Securities in New York City. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us.
I thought we'd go through loss harvesting today, in that it's such a difficult topic, and so many clients have short-term losses in their portfolio because of the recent volatility of the stock market. Other clients have long-term losses. Basically, why is this such an important topic for investors? And if you can just set that out, and then we'll go into some more of the detail.
Well, the fact that we're talking about loss harvesting now is when most people do look at the possibilities of what's in their portfolio, because they may have some realized gains. And many people loss harvest only in December when they say, gee, I've already got this much in realized gains. What do I have in realized losses that I might be able to take in order to lower my tax bill in April? I think it's been proven through a variety of academic work over the last few years that loss harvesting has more value if it's done all year, not just in December, and that when you're in a really volatile market, the opportunities to loss harvest may be greater than when we're not in a volatile market, and those opportunities may go away more quickly. Just as an example, if you bought a stock at 10 and it goes down to 8, there's an opportunity to harvest that loss. If a few weeks later it pops back up to 10 and you didn't do anything, the opportunity to harvest the loss has gone away. So volatility will create more and larger opportunities to loss harvest, but it also creates the discipline that you have to loss harvest when the opportunity is there, because that same volatility may have things bounce back to where they started and remove the possibility of taking a loss at all.
Bob, a long time ago, Congress realized the games taxpayers play, and they added a statute, 1091, to the code. And 1091 basically is called the wash sale rule. Can you guys walk us through that and why it's so important to comply with that rule?
Right. As Bob said, the idea in that example was to recognize the $2 loss and recognize it for tax purposes. However, in order to recognize the loss, Congress wants you to really be economically out of the security. And so you cannot repurchase that security within 30 days of selling it at a loss. So if you sold the security on October 31st, it means you couldn't have repurchased it. You couldn't have purchased similar securities both 30 days before that or repurchased it 30 days after. So from a period from October 1st until November 30th, you should not be buying those securities. You should be out of those securities for at least 31 days in order to recognize the loss.
And if you,
so Congress's intent was for you to not to wash your loss, not to sell the security and then immediately buy it back so that you're back in the stock and try to take the loss for tax purposes.
But Mark, with my luck, if I tried to do that, the stock would double in value during that 30 days. So what does an investor do to comply with the law but yet retain some exposure to the stock?
Well, let's talk about some of the traditional ways people have looked at this. One way to work with the wash sale rule is exactly what you said, which is you get out of the stock. You don't own it or anything like it for 31 days. And at the end of the 31 days, you buy it back, but you are at the risk of not owning it for that 31 days. And as you said, Murphy's Law could very well kick in that that was the best 31 days it ever had and you missed it. There are other people who deal with the wash sale rule by doing something called doubling up, which is that if you had a loss on 1,000 shares and they decided they'd like to take the loss, they buy another 1,000 shares and hold 2,000 shares for 31 days. And at the end of the 31-day period, they'll sell 1,000 shares, but they'll identify it as the ones they bought a long time ago at a higher basis, thereby realizing their loss. But here, Murphy's Law could kick in as well, because you're now owning twice as much of the stock, and it could very well be the worst 31 days it ever had. So the two choices that, at least as I was taught as a broker, was either be out of it for 31 days or own twice as much of it for 31 days. And what we've done over years is try to find ways that would allow a client to stay in the position, not disturb their alpha, as a rocket scientist might call it, but still allow the clients to harvest a loss. And I do think we found some ways, working through the rules, to do exactly that.
Right. And the first way to do it is, if we were dealing with a single stock, like IBM or any other company, XYZ company, we would buy, so if we had 1,000 shares of XYZ and we had an unrealized loss, we would buy another 1,000 shares of XYZ, but instead of being exposed to, and now we would be exposed to 2,000 shares. So what we want to do is hedge our risk with respect to the 1,000 shares that we just bought. And by doing transactions involving puts and calls, we can severely limit the amount of risk and reward with respect to the additional 1,000 shares that we bought. But now, by doing that transaction, we can now wait the 31 days, and we're hedged on the additional shares, and we could then sell the original shares, take the loss, close the hedge, get rid of the put and call, and now we're back to owning 1,000 shares, but we've recognized the loss.
And so to summarize that, I think everyone believes that doubling up is a way to work around the loss sale rule, and we're just saying, fine, if doubling up works, is there anything in the law that stops us from hedging the risk of that second lot of stock? And if we can neutralize the risk of the second lot of stock, then we've worked our way through this minefield of rules, and we were able to both harvest the loss without either decreasing or increasing the amount of risk we had in that particular security for the 31 days. And again, that is what the government would like you to do. They'd like you to either be out of it or own more of it. So staying in the position, not disturbing your return and harvesting the loss, is the goal we were trying to get to, and one we believe we get to with this hedged double-up transaction.
So, right. And then another transaction would be through the use of ETFs have become a very popular, exchange-traded funds, and, of course, mutual funds. And a lot of the funds allow you to invest based on an index. Well, there'll be S&P 500 funds. So there'll be a fund that invests in the Standard & Poor's 500. And if the S&P is down, you'll have a loss on your ETF or on the mutual fund that you purchase. What you could do is sell the mutual fund, and then there are options on the S&P 500 that sell in the marketplace. And so what you do then is buy an option on the Standard & Poor's 500 index. Purchasing that option probably will cause a wash sale, so that the loss that you've incurred on the sale of the fund will be added to the basis of the option that you purchased. However, that option is taxed under Section 1256 of the Internal Revenue Code, and Section 1256 mandates that you recognize all unrealized gains and losses on those options at the end of the year. So if I bought the fund for $1,000 and I sold it for $800, I would have a $200 loss. If I bought the option for $500, the $200 loss gets added to my basis. I now have a basis of $700 in that option. And if the market stays the same, so that at the end of the year the option is still worth $500, I have to, in quotes, market to market, and I have to recognize that $200 loss now at the end of the year.
So obviously this all gets very technical, but in the second idea, we're flunking the loss sale rule on purpose, taking the penalty, which is folding the cost basis of the property that blew the loss sale rule into the new instrument that we own, And then we're following another rule, which again most people would think of as negative, but we're turning to a positive, which is that these particular contracts have to get marked to market at the end of the year. So it's taking what are considered to be penalties under 1091 and using them to your advantage, and taking the mark-to-market provision of Section 1256 and using that to your advantage. So it's a particular case of, as some people have been known to coin some of these ideas we have, is tax jiu-jitsu in terms of using the weight of the law against itself. This is clearly just black-letter law, and we're just stacking things up in a way that it works out to get to our end result.
Mark and Bob, on behalf of Lineberg Information Services, we want to thank you for being with us today to discuss portfolio tax planning opportunities in a volatile economic environment.